It's that time of year again. The Atlantic hurricane season is upon us. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. We're taking a look at how various areas of the state are preparing for hurricane season and at some new changes in storm response efforts. Let's start in Lakeland, where the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Hurricane Hunter planes have a new home. The agency's Aircraft Operations Center is moving to Lakeland Linder Airport after more than two decades at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa. The grand opening is Friday. Florida Matters' Stephanie Colombini recently walked around the new facility as construction crews scramble to get it ready for the start of hurricane season.
The blaring sounds of power tools echo across the 100,000-square-foot facility, and there's that distinct smell of wet paint in the air. Dozens of construction workers are frantically trying to finish what's essentially a brand-new building, one they've only had about 6 months to complete. Walls are still missing in some areas, and floors are still sticky with glue, as we learn the hard way.
If it seems a little chaotic, it's because it's a little chaotic.
That's Captain Michael Sila, NOAA's commanding officer of aircraft operations. He's been in charge of the move ever since MacDill Air Force Base announced last year it no longer had space. The move to Lakeland Linder is estimated to cost $17.5 million, and Sila says the project's moving at an unusually fast speed for government. But despite the frenzy, he says the center hasn't lost sight of its top priority, making sure its 110 staff members, all of whom are moving over to Lakeland, are ready for hurricane season, which starts every year on June 1st.
We prepare every year to be ready for the entire season. This year's no different. That's what makes this place special, and so the mission impact will be zero.
So even if offices and conference rooms aren't quite 100%, the Hurricane Hunter planes will have a roof over their heads, a big one at that.
Let's see, we can go out on that hangar deck.
Cool.
The massive 58,000-square-foot hangar, slightly larger than MacDill's, can easily fit all nine of the Aircraft Operations Center's aircraft at once, including three used by the Hurricane Hunters. While many Floridians may know about the Hurricane Hunters, what exactly do they do? Sila says there are three primary missions. Hurricane research aims to improve forecasts for future storms. Surveillance involves flying around a storm to get a feel for where it's heading. And the job they're most famous for, reconnaissance, where air crews and scientists fly right into the eye of a hurricane to collect weather data. Sila's a 15-year veteran hurricane hunter and says it's an experience like no other.
You know, it's a little bit different every time, which makes it fun. It's bumpy and violent at times, and that can be some of the more challenging times, you know, but more importantly, you know, you're contributing in some way to an effort that really matters, you know, that impacts people's lives.
The Hurricane Hunter fleet consists of two P-3 Orion turboprop planes and a Gulfstream IV jet. Sound too technical? Might be easier to remember their nicknames, after the Muppets characters Kermit, Miss Piggy, and Gonzo.
It kind of started with a bit of name-calling between the crews that are attached to one airplane or the other, and kind of grew from there. But the important thing about that is really it helps us reach people.
And reaching people's exactly what the center's hoping to do at its new home in Lakeland.
We hope we're going to have a pretty good partnership with some of the local colleges and universities, because I know they're doing things in robotics, for example, that we could learn from. And so our intention is to bring some of their expertise over and hopefully start growing kind of the next generation of employees, which I think will be from Lakeland.
Some other signs NOAA's looking toward the future include a drone shop at the new site, a space it didn't have at MacDill, and some advanced technology. The center recently upgraded one of its Doppler radar systems to a dual Doppler.
It's been explained to me there used to be one spinny thing, and now there's two, and they spin twice as fast.
But seriously,
Doppler radars are absolutely critical for weather forecasting and weather research. The resolutions that can be gathered with that radar are significant, and we just finished deploying that for the first time to do tornado research, and we'll apply that same sensor for this year's hurricane season, hopefully with similar results.
Silas says some perks of operating at MacDill will be missed, like top-notch Air Force security. But he says he's ready for the center to move on to a place all 110 employees can call their home.
No one works the way we work. We know ourselves best. We know what we do and how we do it, and this base will reflect that because we designed it.
Sila expects the full transition to wrap up later this summer. For Florida Matters, I'm Stephanie Colombini.
Last season's storm surge in Cedar Key from Hurricane Hermine ranked in the top five, despite the Category 1 storm staying more than 100 miles offshore. Even though winds never reached hurricane strength along the coast, life-threatening storm surge flooding still occurred. Meteorologist Jeff Huffman says this is an example of why the National Hurricane Center will be sending out two different types of watches and warnings this season.
Your phone, if you allow it to do so, can make many different types of noise. Some are light and non-invasive, but some are aimed at getting your attention. That one isn't as easy to turn off. It's a wireless emergency alert from the Department of Homeland Security. And there's a new reason you may hear that sound this hurricane season.
So if you're in this warning area, that means you've got potential for life-threatening conditions and you need to take action to protect yourself.
That's hurricane specialist Jamie Rome from the National Hurricane Center describing a new storm surge warning that could be issued by NOAA this year. He calls it beautifully simple.
I think that's the problem with storm surge is everybody's hung up with specifics, elevation, the storm moves over here, storm moves over there. Instead, we need to be focusing on, hey, has a significant enough threat in your community that the National Weather Service feels necessary to warn you. You should take action.
The warning is different than one of those detailed maps you may have seen on a website that shade in a color with a corresponding water level. Meteorologist Angie Agnetti from the National Weather Service Jacksonville says those numbers aren't an exact science.
The key is that it's giving you a worst case scenario, and it's highly recommended that you prepare for that worst case scenario.
Pat Bonish and his wife own a store in Cedar Key, and they thought they had looked at worst case straight in the eye during Hurricane Hermine. He and his wife were rescued by the town's mayor during the height of the storm.
I've never seen it come in that fast, and that's sort of the reaction everyone has said, is that it came in so fast. I mean, within a matter of, I'd say, a half hour to 45 minutes, it had come up 2 to 3 feet.
And it just kept coming, up to 7 feet in some parts of this quaint Nature Coast community. The force of all that water can wash out roads and bridges, which would be a huge problem for Cedar Key. The entire town, not just those who might flood, is connected by only one bridge.
The last thing I want to do is put other people in danger to have to come rescue me because I was the idiot that stayed.
And to think the eye of Hermine stayed more than 100 miles offshore. Storm surge is not something new, but history has taught us that the hazards from the water are not always married to the wind. This is why hurricane specialist Mr. Rome believed there needed to be an upgrade to the way the science was communicated.
Well, the storm surge warning is really, you're either in it or you're not in it. So it's a very quick call to action. If you're in it, then you would probably seek evacuation instructions from local emergency managers.
And Angie says, frankly,
if you're waiting on the storm surge map and the storm surge watch and warning to prepare, you're already behind the curveball.
And Pat and his wife certainly won't be waiting this year.
I think one storm like this will bring it to the forefront of everyone's mind to say the next storm, days in advance, will we make sure we're 100% prepared. Knowing what we know now, I would probably never stay.
From the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network in Gainesville, I'm Jeff Hoffman.
WUSF and WSMR are part of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network, and an alert can be sent straight to your mobile device if you're in a new storm surge watch or warning this year through our mobile app, Florida Storms. You might be hearing a lot of talk about maps this hurricane season, storm surge maps, and perhaps even flood zone maps. Florida Matters' Susan Giles Wantuck helps break down the differences and what they mean for you.
Let's start with storm surge maps. They help emergency managers make plans to protect the nearly 21 million people who call Florida home. by predicting how high the water wall forced onshore by a storm might be and how far inland it might invade. That will also help you know when it's time to head for higher ground. And this year, storm surge maps are new. Chris Zambito is the chair of the Florida Floodplain Managers Association. He said Florida used to have 11 distinct SLOSH models. That's a model specifically for hurricane planning. Tampa, Miami, the Panhandle, they all had their own. So the state and the National Hurricane Center worked together to create a super basin.
When you have any of these mapping studies, whether it's for the FEMA mapping or hurricane planning, you have these seams of where one study was done and a study next to it was done. And so there's some inconsistencies right at the border. So by doing a super basin now, they kind of had the whole peninsula of Florida remapped.
So here's how that might play out on evacuation maps in Hillsborough County, for example.
You're going to see red, yellow, green, blue, and it's going to go push a certain extent inland. So what I'm saying is, from at least the few maps that I've looked at, that extent inland is not changing dramatically. I think what you're seeing, though, is that the depth of water shown to be within those zones is going up.
Right now, emergency managers across the state are adding this new information into their plans. But Pinellas County Floodplain Coordinator Lisa Foster says if you hear there are changes to evacuation zones in your neighborhood, stay up on it.
Living in Florida comes with its risks, especially if you're close to the coast or close to a river or close to a pond. I mean, even in just a highly developed urban area, the stormwater system can get overloaded. So I think you just need to be aware.
That goes for tourists, too. Make a plan if your hotel is in an evacuation zone. Then there are flood zone maps, which are updated as flood risks change because of development, erosion, or other factors. FEMA uses them to determine whether you have to carry flood insurance and just how much you'll pay if you choose to go with the National Flood Insurance Program. This applies to those with a federally backed mortgage. Right now, there are only about 1.8 million flood insurance policies in effect in Florida. Flood insurance rates under the national program are surging now because it was pushed deeply into the red by payouts for Hurricane Katrina and Rita in 2005, and more recently, Superstorm Sandy. FEMA's Susan Wilson says congressional changes in the last several years will now force owners of properties that had subsidized flood insurance rates to eventually pay full freight.
Their policies are being increased at a gradual rate so that eventually they will become actuarial or risk rated.
And she says it's important to remember that flood insurance is a separate policy from homeowners insurance. While hurricane season is the time of year people talk most about the risk for flooding, Pinellas County Floodplain Manager Foster says it isn't tied to a season.
Because I understand that anywhere it rains, it can flood. A tree could fall and block a pipe. There could be nowhere for the water to go. You could get a storm surge. There are multiple things that could happen. I mean, it's the risk you take to live in Florida.
That's why one of the mottos of emergency personnel is turn around, don't drown. For Florida Matters, I'm Susan Giles, One Tech.
It's a preview of the 2017 Atlantic hurricane season. Coming up,
the big challenge we face for evacuation of the Florida Keys is it takes 36 to 48 hours for us to move everybody out of harm's way.
I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters, and we are previewing the 2017 Atlantic hurricane season. The deadline for the National Flood Insurance Program to be reauthorized is looming. Reporter Quincy Walters explores the history of the program that's racked up billions of dollars in debt, who needs coverage from the program, and why it's so expensive.
It's a windy, slightly overcast day along Fort Myers Beach. This is what's called a special flood hazard area. If you're mortgaging property here, like Jackie Lezak is, you're legally required to get flood insurance.
I'm good. Yeah, so this is our little gift shop.
Lezak is tending to the Sea Gypsy Inn. It's a quaint little gift shop, as well as a small four-room hotel. It has a historical designation from the city.
This also was the first library in Lee County in 1955.
When she opened up shop here in 2012, she got flood insurance from the National Flood Insurance Program, started in the 1960s to address what the private market had not done. It's managed by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, and it has to be authorized every 5 years. The deadline to reauthorize is this September. According to FEMA, Lezak is one of nearly 2 million Floridians with a home or business covered by the program. That's out of about 5 million people nationwide. Lezak has $180,000 in coverage. Her premium started at $2,700 per year. 1 year later, it skyrocketed to $47,000. She thought it was a mistake.
After I got done taking deep breaths and trying not to cry, I picked up the phone and started making phone calls to our town council, to our county commissioners. I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
She found out the hike was a result of the Biggert Waters Reform Act of 2012, legislation that removed subsidies from policies in the federal insurance program. Lezak says she feels like it's more of a tax than insurance.
It's because only people needing to have a mortgage have to have this. I had to let the policy lapse.
In an email, FEMA told us there are also several factors that lead to rate increases. There's inflation and legislatively mandated fees, surcharges, and just regular rate changes. Lezak says based on the new estimates after the Biggert Waters Reform Act passed, her store was expected to flood every 3 years. But she says it never has.
Ever. It's been here since the 40s. It's not flooded once on record. It just doesn't make sense.
Agent Chris Heydrich of Heydrich & Company Insurance on Sanibel says he's not sure how the National Flood Insurance Program, or NFIP, came up with that calculation either. Heydrich sells flood insurance from private companies, which is also an option.
It's important that an insurance agent is looking at both options and presenting both options to consumers so they can clearly see which option is best for them.
Heydrich says Congress quickly realized the problem caused by the Biggert Waters Act because the following year it implemented new legislation.
The Homeowner Flood Insurance Affordability Act of 2014 was passed to provide some relief for the unintended consequences of Biggert Waters.
So what happened to Jackie Lezak's rate?
I re-picked up our flood insurance.
Closer to her original $2,700 rate.
Now it goes up 25% a year on last year's premium until it reaches the $47,000 again.
The mechanics of the national program were planned to work like this. It would borrow from the Treasury Department in times of bad flooding, and in times of little flooding, the program would pay the Treasury back. But it never took into account the potential for catastrophes like Hurricane Katrina in 2005 or Superstorm Sandy in 2012. The former administrator of FEMA, who is also the former director of Florida's Division of Emergency Management, Craig Fugate, says it's hopeless.
The National Flood Insurance Program is so far in debt it'll never pay itself out.
Even though the National Flood Program has racked up nearly $25 billion in debt, members of Congress, like Republican Congressman Francis Rooney of Naples, want it reauthorized but reformed.
And we've told them how we feel they affect Florida and how important it is that if we have a private sector flood program, which would be a great thing, that it also provide for a national flood insurance backup, and it needs to be at an affordable price.
Jackie Lezak's Sea Gypsy Inn is right on the beach. High-risk area. Of course, her flood insurance premium will be high. But experts say even if you live inland, you should consider flood insurance.
More than 25% of National Flood Insurance Program flood claims come from X zones, which are low risk.
That's Billy Jacoby, a floodplain manager in Lee County.
And you really should consider having flood insurance even if you're not required to carry it.
Because people without flood insurance means a heavier burden for taxpayers when inevitably, another superstorm hits. I'm Quincy Walters in Fort Myers.
Last year, St. Petersburg's sewer system was overwhelmed by heavy rains during tropical storms Colin and Hermine. Florida Matter's Julio Ochoa tells us how the city's upgrading the system so it won't have to release partially treated sewage into the streets and into Tampa Bay again.
On a typical spring day, when it hasn't rained in a while, about 7 million gallons of raw sewage flows into St. Petersburg's Southwest Water Treatment Plant. That's plant supervisor David Weber, standing above the 54-inch pipe that delivers sewage into the plant. He says the facility was built to handle 40 million gallons of raw sewage a day. But during heavy rainfall, the amount of sewage flowing into the plant multiplies because leaky pipes and manholes let rainwater into the system. During Tropical Storm Hermine last year, as much as 84 million gallons of sewage flowed in each day, overwhelming the plant. The city needed to keep raw sewage from backing onto streets and into people's homes, so the partially treated sewage was dumped into Tampa Bay. Jason Venable is a supervisor at the city's Southwest Water Treatment Plant. He had to open the valves that sent the sewage into Tampa Bay. The St. Petersburg native has spent 25 years in the Army National Guard. He compared the sense of helplessness to a failed mission in Iraq.
The sense of defeat and helplessness is the same. It is very hard. It takes an emotional toll on me.
All told, more than 160 million gallons of sewage were released into the bay after Hermine. Millions more overflowed onto the city's streets. St. Petersburg wasn't the only municipality overwhelmed by sewage during Hermine. Tampa, Largo, Clearwater, and Pinellas and Pasco counties faced similar problems. But St. Petersburg was the worst offender. The problem started during Tropical Storm Colin. The storm hit just months after the city closed its downtown water treatment plant, reducing the amount of sewage it could process. The releases after Hermine led to layoffs and a state investigation. The State Department of Environmental Protection forced the city to make improvements or face more than $800,000 in fines. Public Works Administrator Claude Tankersley says the improvements now underway will allow the city to process more sewage than had it reopened the downtown plant.
So the improvements we're putting in this summer were designed to handle the kind of flows we saw during Hermine.
These upgrades will help alleviate bottlenecks happening in some areas at the Southwest plant. Other improvements include a new storage tank and new filters that will allow the city to process 45 million gallons more sewage per day. And there are two new wells being drilled that will give the city somewhere to put the treated reclaimed water. Right now, the city has three wells on site at the Southwest plant, where 45 million gallons of reclaimed water can be pumped each day. Weber, the plant supervisor, says the city is drilling a fourth well at the plant and another one down the street.
This is the well that the new one that they're drilling for us.
Together, they'll be able to handle an additional 30 million gallons per day. Those improvements, along with others, will be phased in throughout the summer and wrap up by mid-September. The city says it will then be able to process up to 175 million gallons of raw sewage a day. That's more than enough to handle the peak flow of 155 million gallons a day from Hermine. At a recent event to showcase other upgrades, Mayor Rick Kreisman says the city will be ready for the second half of hurricane season.
I'm optimistic that we're going to have a majority of the work done.
But the mayor admits he's hoping Mother Nature will be a little kinder until the upgrades are in place. For Florida Matters, I'm Julio Ochoa.
For those in the path of a hurricane, evacuations are not only important, they can save lives. That is especially true in the Florida Keys. The island chain has a population of 75,000, plus tens of thousands of tourists at any given time, along a low-lying stretch of islands with a single evacuation route. As reporter Nancy Klinginger explains, the plans for evacuations in the Florida Keys can be instructive for the rest of the states.
The Florida Keys are not the only place in the U.S. that's vulnerable to hurricanes. That's true anywhere on the Atlantic or Gulf coasts. But the thing about the Keys is that when you're an island chain, the whole county is a coast. There is no inland.
Much of the Florida Keys is only about 5 feet above sea level.
Martin Centerfit is Monroe County's Director of Emergency Management. The county makes the calls on evacuation. When a storm threatening the Keys is projected to be Category 3 or above, the official policy is mandatory evacuation. The county does not open shelters. And that's where it gets tricky with the geography of the island chain. The inhabited Keys are 120 miles long, with one road, the Overseas Highway, connecting them.
The big challenge we face for evacuation of the Florida Keys is it takes 36 to 48 hours for us to move everybody out of harm's way.
They have to make the evacuation call before they know for sure whether the storm will actually hit the Keys or at what intensity.
The storms change. They move. They turn.
John Rizzo is the warning coordination meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Key West.
We try to provide not just what is the most likely outcome, but also what we call a plausible worst case.
So when the county makes the call to evacuate, it might be with only a 30 or 40% probability that the storm will hit the Keys or hit it as a Category 3 or higher.
We can't wait for those probabilities to go up because then we run out of time for evacuation.
So there's the challenge of when to make the call. And then there's the challenge of persuading the public to heed the call. Some people don't have the money to leave. Others have left before and wound up in the path of storms like Andrew in 1992 or Wilma in 2005.
We're definitely planning on people staying because a lot of people aren't going to leave.
Craig Cates is the mayor of Key West. That's the largest population center in the Keys and the farthest from the mainland.
The difficult part is our first responders to send them out in the middle of a hurricane because somebody is doing something, stupid, and then they expect somebody to come and save them and risk somebody's life doing that.
And even if you make it through the storm, it could be unpleasant afterwards, especially if a section of the highway or the water pipe underneath gets washed out.
No air conditioning, no power, perhaps no running water. It starts becoming a very stark contrast to the quality of life that we live in a normal day here in the Florida Keys.
People who have been in the Keys for a while consider themselves hurricane veterans. Hurricane George was a Category 2 storm in 1998 that downed trees and knocked out power for weeks in some places. Wilma swamped a lot of the islands in 2005, causing millions in damage to homes, businesses, and cars.
But when we go into Category 3, 4, and 5 storms, much like what last hit the Keys in 1960, Hurricane Donna, those become catastrophic. They destroy everything in front of them. And so it's trying to get people to understand that, look, though you may have been through Wilma, though you may have been through George's, it can get much, much worse.
There's also the challenge of reaching people who haven't been through a hurricane at all. Wilma was more than 10 years ago. Donna, more than 50.
What happens is that some of your population leaves the coast, and you lose that life experience. And new folks come in years later. And so it sometimes seems like you're starting over again, but not unlike that of a school.
Learning to live in a storm zone and the possibility that you might be ordered to leave even when the storm doesn't wind up coming here is part of life at the end of the road. I'm Nancy Klingener in Key West.
That's it for today's show. You can find more on the 2017 Atlantic hurricane season on our website, wusfnews.org. What are your concerns about storms this year? Share your questions and comments with us on our Facebook page or tweet us at Florida Matters. Florida Matters is produced by Stephanie Colombini and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Kirsten Cooper. Thanks for listening.